Record. Hey everybody, this is Rosemary from Photography Fireside, and I have Suzanne Rothmeyer here today. I'm so excited that you came on. I'm also just really glad to see your face again. It's been a while since we chatted.
I know. And the same thing happened this time as last time. We spent like all this time before we started recording.
Yeah.
Getting into conversation.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, luckily the recording system and all that is set up this time. I mean, it's Zoom, so it's not like it's that complicated. We're not having any big issues with the recording process, but.
Right. That's okay. The important thing is to, it is nice to see you again.
Yeah, little kinks. So one of the things, I mean, we're obviously doing a talks about COVID and how it's affected your business and just you as an artist. Individually. And also we had talked last time in conversation about a lot of different pieces that you've worked on, but we were talking about your project Melancholia, mm-hmm. which had recently just been published through Medium. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that'd be a good place to start here in just a minute. But first I just wanted to, when all this came down the pipe with COVID-19, I know that it was kind of a shock to all of us, because at first it was just like, wait, what does this mean for me as an individual? What does this mean for my business? And it was kind of like a trickle down of just trying to figure out what this meant for us. What was your experience with that?
I experienced a slip before the shelter at home. I was experiencing a slowdown. People were starting to, clients were calling like, can we still do our shoot or whatever? And this is before they did the actual shelter in place.
Sure.
And my husband and I had gone camping because, you know, that's what we do. And we had had this just glorious time camping. We were dispersed camping. And, you know, laid under the stars that night, and we're just blissing out, you know, we don't have cell service where we camp. So we're just totally blissed out driving back. And we always stop somewhere on the way back to have a post camping meal. And, so we stopped at, I think it was Bird's View Burgers.
And I love that place.
Yeah.
And, we both know that place.
Yeah. And we walk in and there's the owner was standing there, and there was one customer, and they were in the middle of this conversation that clearly was very stressful. And the order had just come down for shelter. And we're like, wait, what? And of course, my husband's in the restaurant and liquor industry, bar and restaurant. And he's a independent contractor for two different places. And so it was like, we all have to shut down at midnight. And so we were just, it was so surreal. We're like, wait, what? And it was so jarring because we, you know, like I said, we're just like,
you're feeling good.
No, feeling good. And it just absolutely was like going, you know, 100 miles an hour into a brick wall. And so of course, and our cell phones had started just blowing up. And so then we're just like racing home and trying to, you know, answer everybody. And literally from one day to the next, my business just came to a screeching halt. And for me, because I'm self-employed, and there, at that time when that first happened, there was nothing in unemployment for self-employed and independent contractors. That didn't come until later. And so I was like, holy shit. You know, I suddenly have no income.
Yeah. I mean, that's the funny thing is like a lot of people don't know, and a lot of our listeners will relate, because unemployment did not exist for sole props and self-employed. So there was no paperwork to fill out. So it's just like completely frozen.
And at first there was no conversation about that either. So I was just going, what in the heck am I going to do? And so I immediately went out and just got this little side gig at the local market doing their curbside. And that was like a huge, here I've been, I've had my business for like almost 20 years.
Yeah.
And it had been such, and before that, you know, I had been an independent contractor. And so it had been a long time since I had worked for somebody else. So I kind of went through this very weird identity crisis.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean,
like, what am I now? Am I ever going to be able to be a photographer again? Is that not going to be, will I not be able to do that? And you know, for the next year or two, I literally was like, how is this even going to look? And how does it come back if it does come back, and how long will that take? And who am I now? You know, when people ask, what do I do? Do I say I'm curbside delivery for a market? You know, not that there's anything wrong with that, but it was just for me, it was just like from one moment to the next, my entire identity just swung way over. And I was working with these awesome women, just these, that was the best part of it though. And we were all thrown into it. They didn't have a system for it before this. So it was like trying to figure out a system and implement it all at the same time together. So you form this kind of interesting bond with people when you're thrown, you know, just thrown in the water like that.
Yeah.
And so it wound up being, in its own kind of weird way, this really positive experience. And I was sad when I left. I was very sad because I really, really liked the people I was working with. And hopefully I'll keep seeing them because it is a small town and I shop there anyway. So, but yeah, it was really very surreal and scary. And I went through it, and I'm not a person who really gets depressed or anxious very much. Everybody gets that, you know, to some degree. And of course I experience those things, but I've never been a person who kind of sinks into that or holds onto it or gets entrapped by it. And I was really having some big waves of that. And one day it would be I'd feel one way and just succumbing to it. And then the next day I'd feel like, I'm gonna do, you know, whatever. And I had no motivation. Of course, when I was doing the side gig, I was working my ass off. Mm-hmm. And so I was just exhausted when I came home. Yeah. And, but then when that ended, I was like in this weird space again, where it was like, I can't go, because of course the unemployment for us kind of started kicking in. So I applied for that and I got that, but still it's like not as much as you're normally making.
No.
And
it did take a while. I mean, it's
to
even know what the answer was, if that was going to kick in, to the point to that it actually does kick in.
So at least I had that immediate financial thing, you know, not covered to what I normally have, but to enough of a degree where I didn't have to stress like I was stressing before or feel that anxiety to that degree. And then I was just, I don't know, I was sort of in a weird space for probably a full week where I could have been doing all kinds of projects at home. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of things that need to be done on my home, and I wasn't doing any of them. And I don't know why. And I talked to some other people and they were experiencing the same thing. It's like, for once you had the time to do it, but the motivation wasn't there because you're just, it's like this other whole anxiety thing. And the news that is just, it had a weird paralyzing effect.
Yeah, I think so. I think that I remember going through something similar and also being really kind of feeling bitter at people that were just all of a sudden creating all of these projects. And they're like, I started this new group on Facebook. And I just felt like I was still just paralyzed with what's happening? What do I do now? Like, and I was questioning everything about my career from, you know, kind of the same as like, questioning, like, you know, I'd spent so much time because, you know, I do the studio share program too. And I'd spent so much time talking to other photographers and their fear and helping them navigate either getting out of the studio space or what it might look like in the complete unknown of staying. I felt super depressed and down, just like, what, you know, where do we go? Where do we go from here? And people who had the energy to like create at that point was just so envious of that.
I love how you use the word bitter. It's like, that's so honest. Yeah, I know. I was envious of that too. I definitely was. And I was wishing that I felt more impulse to do that. And it's not that I didn't feel the impulse. Because you know, the dream is for me to have both the time and not have the financial worry I mean, there's financial worry, but you know, at least I was getting some income coming in.
Yeah, and there was a balance.
There was a balance there. And so, you know, normally, oh my gosh, all the projects that I would be collaborating on to do, I could do, but I can't do them because they're all collaborations.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I can't do them.
That's hard.
It's really hard. And so, you know, and then like you say, it's sort of like you're bitter and you're angry and you're frustrated. And so you don't even want to get excited about any of them. I'm just this past week or so coming out of that and having conversations with those other creatives. Because I had like four collaborative shoots on the books right before this hit, and those all went out the window. And then since this happened, we still want to do those, but since this happened, there's a couple of other ones that, you know, have sort of cropped up out of this, you know, like I was saying earlier. So
I was going to say, I mean, there must be, you know, after a period of just mentally coping and then recovering, I guess there's a sense of recovery that happens before you can feel the energy to create again, whatever path we take to get there. But I was going to ask you, like, and we've just talked about this a little bit before we got on, but we were talking a little bit about how you've kind of transformed into a new space of thinking about this is our life experience and now this is where I might want to go creatively. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
You mean as far as doing a project around this?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yes, Suzanne, let me put it in simple terms for you. I think like we touched on before you hit the record button, an interesting thing, both with, you know, initially I was seeing it in just on social media with a photographer to photographer or and kind of this policing of each other. And when some photographers were going and doing the porch portraits and things, and somebody reached out to me too, maybe it was you or maybe it was somebody else, because I'm not really in any photography groups, but somebody forwarded it on to me, and I just saw kind of what was happening on social media of photographers saying to other photographers, you shouldn't be out there doing that. And, you know, it's like, I'm on the street. I'm like 50 feet away from them. And I just thought, don't like where this is going. And I don't want to be a part of anything like that.
Yeah. So just to backtrack for our listeners, there's a lot that's going on in the photography community. There's a lot that's going on in the world, but the basic premise of this is that photographers who have found some way to shoot safely, to continue shooting or to document this time, have been under some pressure and being policed by other photographers that maybe what they're doing isn't complying with all of the rules. And it's kind of created its own little incubation thing online that has been a little bit toxic. And so that's kind of what the conversation that we had prior is just about, kind of looking at that objectively and also just with some anxiety and stepping away from it a bit is kind of what you're touching on.
Definitely. Definitely. And then from there, as time kind of has gone on with this, you know, I'm seeing this evolution of that whole thing across, you know, everything across the board, and this, you know, policing of each other and the virtue signaling and all of those kinds of conversations and dynamics going on. And I'm disturbed by the additional layer of polarization on top of a society that's already become so polarized, and the dividing up of everybody into literally like camp A or camp B. And, you know, that Venn diagram that's gone around where, you know, that you think this, and that overlap is me, you know, mm-hmm. And I'm interested in, you know, if you question the narrative at all, you are villainized and you're immediately put into X camp, and you may not have any identification with that camp. And your modus for asking the question in the first place may be very, very different from what that camp is proposing happens. Mm-hmm. But nobody cares about that. You know, nobody wants to look at it deeply enough to understand that. It's just become this very, very superficial sorting system that I find really, really disturbing. And I think it's always important to be asking questions. And I think, I find, unfortunately, a lot of the times the people who are asking some of these questions are doing far more research than the people who are villainizing them and wanting to just put them in a certain group. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm more interested. So I've stepped way back. You know, I've stepped way back, and not that I'm pretty careful about how vocal I am. I usually use art, you know, projects to speak to things. But I'm interested in sort of, like I said earlier, where those black and white things sort of bleed out, and the edges of those and kind of the intersections of those. That's more what I'm interested in kind of taking a look at, and I'm percolating on some ideas of how to speak to that visually. Because I find it very sad. I find it sad, and I find it disturbing, a little scary. And then you, like we were saying, it's like you find a sort of gag rule on everyone. Nobody's allowed. And that to me is very frightening.
It should be frightening.
Yeah.
If we're unable to ask questions without critical thinking. And I think that's...
There's a difference between asking questions about a narrative that's going on and just slamming that narrative to put your own viewpoint of what you believe to be the absolute correct and right answer. Because there's a whole lot of that going on. And interestingly, I see so much of that on social media. And there's been some times where there's been some people who have done some research, some real research, and are questioning certain things. And they're being taken down like that. And I find that bizarre.
Yeah.
That the platform is taken out from under somebody who's asking a legitimate question.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that same platform is wide open and available to anybody who wants to just slam the other side. So there's some really interesting
dynamics. Is there a normalized behavior that over the course of the last 2 years, it seems like we've adopted this online debate that's about sort of crushing another opinion, like winning the argument?
Yep.
Like, where's your trophy for winning the argument? But we've lost all this critical thinking in the process.
And really, really valuable and interesting conversations. We've lost the art of conversation. We really have.
Yeah.
And that's just sad because, like you say, it's like this, it's just reduced to this contest. And exactly what you're saying, it's like, to what end? What's the prize? What are we gaining?
Well, I think that's the biggest question that we have to ask right now is like, what is the goal? Like, if photographers are online arguing with each other about whether or not somebody's following the rules while they're photographing somebody from a safe distance, a family, and documenting this time, it's like, what is lost and what is gained?
Yeah.
Because truly, that's, you know, you might win the argument and you might be able to police everybody and police everybody's behavior and set up whatever rules for photographers that we're all supposed to follow in order to be a good photographer. But ultimately you have to come down to what is lost and what is gained by setting up a rule.
Yeah.
And I think that when you start seeing those arguments, you can instantly see where we're losing, like we're losing our connection with each other. And, the debates seem a little bit, well, first off, they're just incredibly time consuming.
Yeah. True. Such a time suck.
Yikes. Yeah. It's such a time suck. And it's honestly, it's stuff that you should be able to figure out on your own. Like, you should be able to figure out, common sense says you should be able to figure out whether or not you think it's safe to photograph somebody from a distance on their porch without any contact.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not that hard. But apparently we're arguing about it online.
Right.
Oh,
right. Give somebody a podium and they're going to get up there and use it, by God. Yeah. I did do, and I was very hesitant and, you know, to go forward with them, but I did have, there were a couple of shoots I had on the books for pregnant women. And of course, that's a time sensitive thing. One had waited until, you know, pretty late in, and it's her last pregnancy. She's got a couple of other children, and she didn't do it with her other children, and she regrets that, and she really wanted to do it for this one. And ultimately, I told her I wouldn't do anything indoors or in studio, but that if we could do it outside where I could only use my longest lens and be, you know, really, I was, gosh, more like 20 to 30 feet away, mm-hmm. you know. Then I would go ahead and do it. But, you know, it was really, I was not and have not been reaching out to anyone. You know, it's been very much the opposite of, and this last week I'm seeing a whole lot more activity and inquiries. You know, people are, I think they're just tired of it, you know.
People are tired of this. And also I think that people realize some things that really truly matter to them. And I think that that's actually really refreshing for me as a photographer to realize that, you know, while I was so fearful, I'm like, well, you know, photography is this extra thing that nobody needs. Like,
right, exactly.
You don't need toilet paper.
Yeah.
I had to add that in. Okay.
And now it's meat. Now you can't find meat because the media, you know, had to go and say, oh, there's going to be a supply chain, you know, problem with meat. And so everybody rushes to Costco and wipes out all the meat. God.
Yeah. I know. You know, there are some benefits to just, for me, speaking of that, it's just, I have found that getting offline, I think the first thing I did was I was on Facebook a lot just trying to get information, like what's happening next. It was sort of a source with my peers to kind of know what was going on with business, and all of that was just kind of getting fed to me. And then I just had it. I was like, I feel so overwhelmed with COVID that I just had to check out and check in with myself and disconnect quite a bit. So, but it's, I think it is sort of this, I remember when 9/11 happened and it was just like the TV was on all the time for like an entire week. And I remember feeling like every minute was committed to this disaster. And it certainly was like very tragic and overwhelming. And it was overwhelming knowing what was going to happen with the future of America. And it's the same right now, but I've learned a lot since then about self-care.
I'm checking in at little intervals of, and I'll go a whole day without listening to the news, because what also happens when the news is doing that, when the media is doing that, and 9/11 was a perfect example, you know, they couldn't let it have silence on that for a second. And what happens in that too is that you wind up getting a whole lot of information streams that have not been properly vetted yet, and then they have to be corrected later, and you better hope you're paying attention when it's corrected, you know, because they feel like they have to fill that space, that airspace. But
yeah, because it's
they're just feeding stuff through, and it's like, is this really even meaningful information at this point? And you're saying that might be or might be this, and all it's doing is ramping up people's anxiety when it hasn't been vetted yet.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's even stranger now to experience it with social media being so prevalent, because, you know, when we experienced 9/11, we weren't all on Facebook 24/7,
right.
Or Instagram or whatever you're on, all the gazillion things that we're on. But it is so much more overwhelming when everybody you know is discussing it and everybody in your field is discussing it and all the different areas, like, you know,
the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And how it's affecting, you know, how is it affecting your business colleagues, and how is it affecting your, you know, like, I'm connected to the news media outlet a lot, so I'm kind of watching their stories come out. How's it affecting them and what they're producing? And it was just too much. It's too much, I think, for humans to just take in.
Yeah. Regularly. It's just oversaturation. And then yeah. It's like using up all of the, what is it, the rods and stuff in your eyes. It's like, it just all gets used up and then you're just catatonic.
Yeah. And I think that like what you were saying that led me to bring that up was just, you know, when we're constantly tapped into that panic and that, you know, what should I do? What should I do? And the world is falling apart. When somebody says all the meat's going to be gone, you run to the store and you buy all the meat, you know, or the toilet paper or whatever, you know? So it's like, there's this sudden feel of like extreme doom. And I think that, you know, even in business, I think that one of the most interesting things that I think has happened in business is that we, like you were describing before with unemployment, it's like there weren't any answers. And so yeah. Here everything feels completely chaotic. We're asking all these questions. There were no answers. Even the federal government had zero answers. There was no funding. It was just this, you know, this really intense thing just happened and nothing was put in place. It was this hurry up and wait scenario. And how did you sort of sort it out emotionally as things were going on? Cause that was it's been quite a process.
It really has. Yeah. And again, I would say in all honesty, I have days where I think one way about it and other days where I feel another way, you know, in terms of how to progress. You know, at first it was just, you know, there was no control. It was just something that was happening to me, to my business. And there were no answers. There was no even conversation around for people like me that were self-employed.
It's really lonely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Isolated and feeling.
Yeah. Just ripped out. And then where are you going to, so my, cause I'm an action person. So, my immediate response was, and I was on my way to go stand up paddleboarding. And I couldn't do it because I thought I'm not going to even enjoy myself. And so I pulled over to the side of the road. I called the local market and I turned around in my like, you know, outdoor getup, went in and, you know,
applied. So cold then.
Job, you know, that was just like, and it was just so bizarre. You know, I haven't punched a clock and I don't even know when, I mean, because even before this and before the one before it was where I was an independent contractor, before that I was salaried, you know, and I'm trying to think back to when I don't think I've punched a clock since I was a teenager, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's really bizarre on a lot of levels. And again, the people were what made it as always with anything. And we were all suffering because I was working with other people who had their own businesses. I was working with people who, you know, were managers of stores and yeah. owners of their own businesses. I mean, it was weird. It was weird. Yeah. And we're all just sort of thrown into this melting pot and trying to figure it out. And there is a certain magic in that for sure. There really, really is. And I'm super grateful for it. And I think it was a really good thing for me to have because it took my attention away. I was so busy. We were so busy that I didn't have time to sit and freak out about what was or wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
So that was a gift on a lot of levels, actually. And now I'm just, you know, I really am trying to figure out, gosh, like you're saying, what I do for a living, not the branding, you know, which is kind of where my business has gone in the last, you know, few years anyway, but because businesses always need that and content. And I do have some writing contracts with the tourism industry where I write content and articles. So I have that, and that's something I can do from home. Most of it, the photography part of it, some of it requires other people, and that part I can't do right now. But yeah, just kind of thinking where is this going to go with the other part of, you know, the portrait side of my business and that, because I do love that. And I still want to be able to do that, but that is more of a discretionary income sort of thing. And, you know, it's easy to freak yourself out about that, but you also have to remember there's still always people that are going to have that discretionary income. And in reality, kind of what I'm, part of what I'm seeing is a, you know, a shift from, I'm getting inquiries from people who have that kind of income, who want to start planning, who, like, I'm planning one that's going to be a 3-part shoot, conceptual portrait shoot with somebody. And, she's doing it in celebration of her 40th birthday and she's been saving for it. And, you know, yeah, so we're planning it. We're not shooting it yet, obviously, but we're planning it and we're having a ton of fun doing that.
Yeah.
So yeah. And it's made me just like in the last week or two, it's made me, kind of settle down a little bit internally about that and sort of just kind of trust. I just have to keep repeating to myself, do what you do, do the best that you can do with what you have and communicate well and keep putting things out there, whatever that might be. And, it will turn into something. I mean, I just trusting in that process. That's really kind of my mantra right now is just trusting in it. Cause there's really nothing else I can do really.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I love that you pointed out just the planning process too. It's like, I think that, you know, this is a great time. And I think a few other photographers talking about wedding photographers and people doing different areas in the field, but we still have the time to plan and dream
right
with our clients about what can be created. And in a sense, not being rushed to the photo shoot to that point gives us a little more time and perspective as creators on what can be done, you know, and true. What thought can be put in, especially, you know, even on the side of the client. It's like, I find that sometimes my clients really want to rush to the photo shoot and just have something produced rather than taking some time and effort on their side to think about what they truly want out of that experience and out of the photography. And, you know, maybe even just spending a little time in front of the camera or in front of the mirror, thinking about what they love about themselves. So being able to encourage a little bit of the creative process on their side has been a little bit more that I can add to the experience with my clients as well. So that's something that's kind of come up a little bit more.
Yes.
As we're sitting here.
Definitely. Yeah. Because I'm having clients who are booking, you know, into July, August, September, October right now, because we're kind of not sure what's going to happen in the next couple of months.
Yeah.
But they want to get excited about their shoot. And it's like, yeah, we've got all these tools. You know, there's Pinterest, but there's also, like, if you're doing more conceptual stuff, you know, there's some applications that are just incredible, on the iPad, at least, Paste and, what's the other one? Paper and Paste. Do you use those at all?
No.
Oh, gosh. They are brilliant. Yeah, they're brilliant. I'll send them to you. And they're just really great to use for, because I suck at drawing. I'm not an illustrator. But for doing conceptual stuff, communicating, like I can sketch things out, I can pull things into it and lay it out, and then also have text, like talk about what the theme of it is and all of that and what the symbolism, all of that kind of stuff. And it's just a great communication tool, and you can send that to the client, you can send that to other collaborators on the team, and it's a way to kind of get some visuals and get the client more involved in the process than we normally would. Yeah. Like with this one client I just mentioned, it's actually very cool to have the time, be forced to have the time to really go back and forth, sending things back and forth to each other and talking about it and writing about it. And it becomes part of the image in a certain way. Mm-hmm. Just that process that's been elevated to that level. I don't know. It is, it's an interesting thing. It makes me go, gosh, this is what, I mean, we've been missing, you know, you have to do a certain amount to keep your business going and make it viable and all of that. But being forced to slow down like that and have more of that different kind of contact, not physical, but, with your clients, is really pretty fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah, it really changes the experience that mm-hmm. they can have. Not that
especially for them, like, they feel so empowered, you know, over it. You know, they feel really truly like they are part of that collaboration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that in a sense, I mean, and I probably just said this, but it's just, there's been a benefit to my clients slowing down and wanting to do something artistic. It's like not just showing up and expecting magic, but to be an active participant in the process really changes the way that I can document what's going on. And it just enhances that, you know, that collaborative oneness that can happen rather than trying to just produce something like somebody showing up and modeling, you know, it's just
right.
That collaborative experience is so beautiful. And I think that that's, you know, just such a great thing to exchange between each other.
Yeah.
That life experience.
And I think that there's sort of a natural that I'm seeing with my business, even though it's kind of weird. It's like all sort of on paper right now, on the calendar right now, but again, speaking to that fear that I had that, oh, you know, nobody's going to have the money to do that kind of photography. And in reality, I'm starting to see that it's actually kind of a, this is, I don't want to use this term because it sounds negative, but a sloughing off of a certain clientele that doesn't have that budget. And, you know, that is always looking for a, you know, a mini session or, you know, something more scaled down or whatever. And more of the people who do have that budget, even through times like these, and are willing to take the time, because as a business, of course, if I'm taking more time with it, I have to charge more.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's such a blessing to have the time, like you were just saying, but at the same time, you have to charge for that ultimately. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so it's sort of like this interesting thing where, you know, it of its own accord, sort of organically, it's less of that and more of this other that's coming forward. So looks bad ultimately might end up looking good.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I've thought about that a lot. I think that maybe potentially what your hesitation was with saying that is that, you know, people who are looking for these mini sessions and stuff can't afford these more expensive photo shoots, but really it's not necessarily a class thing. And of course we've learned this because when you shoot long enough, you realize that,
oh, it's not,
people value something. They save their money and invest
exactly.
in it. And like that thinking alone, thinking that the only people that can afford you or will spend money on you just naturally have that kind of income.
That's true.
Actually, I
should have been clearer about that. Yeah. Because it's very true. You know, that one client, she's a perfect example. She's not living in a mansion, you know, but she's been putting that money aside because it's a priority for her and it's important to her and it's very meaningful to her. And those are the kind of clients that, you know, are so exciting to get.
Yep.
And true. That you can, yeah.
Yeah.
You can take that time.
Yeah. That's so true. I always get the, you know, the chills when I'm excited about something. And I think that as a photographer who wants to invest in my clients, like it's so neat when they want to invest back because they believe in what you're going to create and collaborate on together. And I think that there's a great value to that. And I think that if we can as photographers produce that, and certainly there are photographers, you know, who they hit basic needs. Like if you need some basic headshots and you love creating that and you love volume and you love the excitement of that style of business, there's nothing wrong with that either. Like,
right. Oh, yeah. I do a ton of headshots, you know, and you know, I do more environmental ones and kind of branding sessions that are way more, you know, involved and creative, but I do a ton of just straight up headshots because there's a need for that. And I actually love doing it.
Yeah.
You know, it's its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, but again, I hope I didn't come off wrong in how I stated that, because it's more of just being excited about, because you feel, I don't know about you, but I mean, I have all these, you know, clients that I just love and they don't have the budget for, you know, to put that kind of time into it. And, but they still want to have something beautiful, and it's hard to, you know, so then you have to just go out and do it, right? Because you've got this limited time because you're mm-hmm. charging this lesser amount, and you don't want to give them up because you love them. You
totally. Yeah, I know.
And you get it all into your business, and you know, yeah. those relationships become very meaningful over time, mm-hmm. and you see their families grow. You see, and it's just, I'll tell you what though, I picked the right year to stop shooting weddings because I stopped shooting.
Oh, you did.
I did it at the start of the year, and I had about four weddings already booked when I decided. I mean, because I decided before the start of the year, but. I had a few already booked. So those I did and am doing. Although the two remaining ones that I have are getting way scaled down because of COVID. The other two happened before COVID hit. So yeah, because, oh my goodness, if I had my calendar filled up like normal with weddings, it would just be such a nightmare because everybody's having to change their plans and they don't even know what to change it to at this point because venues are being kind of vague and yeah. saying, well, we can't really tell you right now if you can still
they don't know.
Yeah.
They don't know what to expect. And yeah, it's really tough. I've talked to a few wedding photographers who are trying to map this out and there just aren't any answers. And it's frustrating. It's, you know, when the clients are frustrated because their life has suddenly changed and
yeah.
you don't know how, you don't have any answers and you also still need to get paid. And it's like,
you're negotiating their emotions over it as well as yeah. your own on top of the logistics.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like suddenly you need a degree in therapy, mm-hmm. you know, in psychology to like figure out how to handle, you know, your clients' emotions along with your own. And it's a lot.
Yeah.
A lot going on, but yeah. Well, I mean, I'm glad that you made that decision. Yeah. Oh man, you dodged a bullet there.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and I was feeling really sad and conflicted over it for a long time. And then I finally did it. And I was feeling sad and conflicted after I did it. But then this happened. I'm like, okay, there was a reason why that happened. And yeah. And it has allowed me to expand more in other areas. So
good. You can't do it all.
No. And there's plenty of wedding photographers out there. Yeah,
for sure. And that's such a hard decision to make is to transition your business. And I know I've done it a gazillion times and it's just so hard. It's so hard because it always has its positives and negatives and letting go of certain clients or letting go of certain thing that you worked really hard at doing and being good at.
Right.
To get good at something else or to continue growing another side of yourself. And it's just this constant balancing thing, isn't it?
It definitely is, definitely. And there's so much anxiety that goes along with that. Self-questioning, you know, all of that. Ugh.
Yeah, seriously. I feel like I owe it to our listeners to cover talking about melancholia because it just got published during this period and we'd actually talked about it, like I said, in the beginning of the podcast. We had talked about this series prior in the podcast you'd been on a few months back, but now it's been published and in a very timely manner. And yeah. I just want to talk about what that experience was like getting this out during COVID.
Well, first off, that was obviously not originally the plan. The plan was that I had intended to write a piece to go along with it. And I just wasn't, for whatever reason, I wasn't getting that done. And the piece itself, I had been working on for about 3 years. The courtroom scene took about a year to put together for a variety of reasons. And then it just sort of was sitting kind of latent, waiting for me to write something to submit it. Cause I was going to submit it to, like Psychology Today and some industry rags like that. And I was going to submit it to HuffPost maybe or something. And I, again, you know, sometimes you look back and you go, there was such a reason clearly why I was not doing that. And because normally I'm very good about submitting stuff for getting published. Uh-huh. And I just wasn't doing it this time. And what happened was there's a journalist in Chicago who she's worked for the main Chicago newspaper out there for years. She had a column, I think, in that. And she's done a whole bunch of, you know, writing and stuff around. And she's also on medium.com. And she saw the images through a connection from the model, actually. And she has struggled with depression her whole life. And she saw the images and she was so struck by them that she contacted me and asked if she could write a piece to go with them. So
that's so unusual.
Yeah, and this was back during the summer, actually. So I said, you know, all of a sudden I felt like, oh, that's a relief to have somebody else, because we talked for about an hour and we just totally, you know, synced, and she got what I was talking about, I got what she was talking about, and I told her the story about, you know, how it came to be with the model, because the model also suffers from depression. I do not, but I have a close family member who suffered from severe depression her whole life and growing up. And so that's why I wanted to do it in the first place. And so it was interesting how the model and I came together, because that was not planned either. And she's the model. It's the same model in all of the images. And it's in the courtroom scene, she is all of the characters. So that she changed wardrobe about 15 times for that. We shot for like 8 hours. So she is the only model in all of them. And so anyway, she started writing a piece, and we all three were talking about it and through emails and stuff. And she was asking us questions, and then it sort of went latent again. She wanted to send it to the Times, to the New York Times was what she really wanted to do with it. And she wound up having, I think she was actually in hospital for a while. So she was dealing with some things, and it went latent again. And then picked back up after the start of the year, and we started having conversations again. And then it just looked like it was all coming together. And we were like, yes, great. And she was about to send us her draft to get our okay. And COVID hit. And so then we're having all these conversations around that. And then we said, okay, so let's make this more timely around this COVID crisis, because, you know, my whole goal with this project was to open up the conversation about depression. There's still so much silence and shame around it. And people who suffer from it don't want to talk about it because they feel that like they're a burden and they feel guilt and shame. And then people who are close to people who are suffering from depression don't know how to, they just want to help, and you can't really help them, you know? And so you wind up, it's awkward. You don't know what to say or what to do. And so I really just wanted to open that conversation up way more and take that guilt and shame out of it and talk about, because we tend to isolate, which is ironic, the person who's depressed, right? Mm-hmm. They're the ones who have a problem. They're the depressed person. They're over here, right?
Yeah.
But the truth of it is that there is a ripple effect going out from that person that is deeply affecting everyone in concentric circles around them, their relationships, their children, their parents, their, you know, siblings, all of it. We're all affected, and that continues to go out and have effects that we're not really talking about, because we just talk about the depressed person. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about how that really radiates out. And then what that looks like in the society, right? And we have these rising levels of depression and anxiety, and it's getting younger and younger ages too, right? So now all of a sudden we have this global pandemic that is the great equalizer, and everyone is suffering some degree or manner of anxiety and depression. And for those who already suffer, it oftentimes is, you know, more acute, obviously. And so the timeliness of it was just bizarre, right? So she kind of shifted her writing on it, rewrote it a bit, and sent it to us. And we realized when we got that final one, and we all three were like, yes, this is it, send it out. It was like right before the start of May, or maybe it was May 1st. And we realized, we didn't realize it before, we realized it was Mental Health Awareness Month. May is. And we hadn't known that. And so she sent it out, and she, I don't know which editor, because, you know, obviously there's a ton of editors at the New York Times, which editor she sent it to first, but he said, he goes, this is really interesting. He says, but I am inundated with content right now. And we really felt like we needed to get it out there. And so then she went to because she lives in Chicago, she went to the bureau chief of the New York Times in Chicago and sent it to them. And they said it's kind of the same thing. They were like, this is really interesting. Send this to our national photo editor in New York. So it bounced back to the national photo editor. And he said, this is really interesting, but we don't do, because it's conceptual photography, we don't do altered photography. You should send this over to the New Yorker. So then we had to make a decision, and I thought, damn, that would be cool, you know, obviously, to get something in the New York, who knows whether they would have picked it up, obviously, but still, just the idea of it, and the fact that they were all still encouraging it, taking the time to encourage it and say, send it over there, was kind of enough for me, actually. That was just a good feeling that it was kind of validated. And the responses were just really positive. And so we decided, I said, you know, I just think I want it to get out there, and I would love to have it in something like that, you know, but the lead time for print, as you know, would kill the immediacy of it. And since she had rewritten it to kind of be in COVID times, we just decided, let's do Medium and get it out there. And it has gotten, so it wound up within a few days, it got curated by the art, the photography, and the mental health curators of medium.com. And it's, you know, it's a big deal to get curated for one. We got curated for three.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so it's recommended reading now. It's gotten, I mean, gosh, after just a week in, I think it had about 4,000 reads.
Wow.
In the first week. So, and the responses have been amazing. You know, people are just really, really reacting to those images, and it's getting, I feel like I have so many platforms that I try to keep up with, but we did start an Instagram feed, Melancholia Stories, and she started, the author is Christine Wolfe, and she started a Facebook page for Melancholia Stories too, because we just kind of want to get people talking about this and how it's, what those effects, ripple effects are, and how it's changing our culture.
Yeah.
And that it's not just the depressed person's problem. It's right. All of our problem. It really is all of our problem. We're all suffering the effects of increased anxiety and depression.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's an amazing story. Do you have any stories from people coming back with commentary, stories, things like that stick out to you?
Yeah, and actually one of the all three of us are saying that the model is, her name is Gina DeLeo Stamey, and she, you know, we've all been getting feedback because we've all been posting it on our platforms. Mm-hmm. And then Christine Wolfe on Medium, she's, you know, people are responding on Medium. And there's a couple of interesting things happening, which one of them happened through the process of shooting it, which was me being the person who doesn't directly suffer from it, and the model being somebody who does, and how the conversations through doing that shoot that we would have, we had a lot of conversations about the imagery, what that imagery meant to me and what it meant to her. And sometimes they would be different and surprising, you know, like for example, one of the ones where there's two where she's looking in a mirror. One of them, her face is sort of disjointed and kind of Picasso-ish a little bit. And for me, it was like, I think I had originally named it Fractured, because I was looking at it from my perspective of being an observer of that person seems to be looking at themselves and going through life in a way that is just not quite lined up, right? It's just sort of disjointed and it isn't quite working. And when they look at themselves, they're seeing something that's not what we're seeing, right? It's just not quite right. And for her, she named that confusion. And it was really the first time I had truly considered that the person suffering from depression was just as confused by it as the rest of us.
Yeah.
That were observing and trying to help. And yeah, so there were a lot of things like that that came up where it was like, and that was the beauty of it. And that's what I really hope happens through people sharing their stories with each other. Both sides of it, because it you gain empathy and understanding on a level that you didn't have before. And really, I think that's what it's all about, is gaining greater understanding and having a place for those conversations to happen. Instead of just the person being depressed and the person trying to help them, it's like opening it up and taking the shame and guilt out of it so that you could have that conversation in the first place and say, hey, this is what it's like for me watching you experiencing this, and then listening to what they're saying about their experience of experiencing it. And then you, each one ramps up a level of understanding for the other one, for the other person on it. And it's going both ways. Mm-hmm. So that was the hope of the project. And so getting a greater audience obviously helps to do that.
Right. And to start this conversation.
Yeah.
Something, and you're right, you know, depression and anxiety are just growing. Like this isn't a one person deal. There's a lot of stuff going on in society. COVID has sort of illuminated it.
There's a pandemic right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know, I feel like in a lot of ways it's, you know, the boiling frog. It's like, we know it's there. We know it exists and we know it's getting worse, but we're like, we're comfortable with this much. We're comfortable with this much, you know, and it just, without trying to tamper it down, you know, a little bit. And I think it is confusing, because I think that a lot, what you just touched on is this sort of, you know, problem. Somebody's got a problem and somebody wants to solve it is not really working.
Right.
Like I'm going to come and fix you so that you're better. And that's sort of our response, is fixing, you know, you broke a vase. I'm going to like glue you back together, but I don't really know how, you know, but I think you're right. Like opening up the conversation about it. These are the places that we don't really want to go. Like,
Right.
Society.
But I think also we don't want to go there because it has been such a one-sided conversation, and there's not just guilt and shame on the, you know, with on the person who's suffering from depression. There's also guilt and resentment for the people who are observing it and around it and in relationship with it. And that's a part of the conversation that, you know, the person, you know, like me, you feel you would feel terrible or hugely guilty to express what you know, all of those feelings and experiences of being in relationship with somebody who's suffering from depression. So we tamp that down, right? And then the person who's depressed tends to tamp it down because they already feel guilty and shameful. And so but if you just have an honest conversation, then both people walk away going, God, you know, I have greater understanding of where they're coming from. They have greater understanding of where I'm coming from, and we actually can have a conversation without all of that guilt and shame around it. And because it's just so hampering to any progress, and it keeps both sides, you know, isolated.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know what it'll solve directly, but I just that was my goal in it, you know, and so. That was an interesting part of it. And then of course there's people who, getting people's responses to the two that have had the biggest response the one where she's in the boat on the ice and the young boy is on the dock staring out at her. For parents, that has been a huge one.
Yeah.
As far as their guilt as a parent, of feeling like they're not, you know, they're not parenting the way they want to be parenting and yeah. present in the way they want to be present. And there's so much guilt and shame around that. And then the other one, I think was the one where she's laying in the field, very isolated. So it's interesting, you know, the one that, you know, I put so much work into, people are kind of fascinated by it, and it's sort of the courtroom. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think that one takes explanation, and people just don't realize looking at it. They don't realize that she's all the people. They don't realize why she's all the people, you know, that it's herself judging herself. So that one tends to take some explanation, but the other ones are just, you know, hit you. And they just, I was so concerned about not being cliche about it. And maybe, you know, I don't know if I have been or not. It was my best attempt. That's all I can say. But the main thing we all three keep hearing is people saying, oh my gosh, I've never seen an image that captures what I'm feeling and how I feel around this.
For sure. Yeah, they're just so powerful. And I want to encourage all the listeners to take a look. Where's the easiest place for the listeners to find? Obviously, it's on Medium, but
right.
I'm assuming you've posted it on your social media sites.
I have, yeah. I've posted it on my Facebook, and I think my active link on my Instagram for at Rothmeyer Art, that's still the main bio link.
That might be the most direct way to just take some time. And I just want to encourage the listeners that, you know, artwork takes time to take in and absorb. So turn off your distractions and take some time with artwork. And of course, join the conversation as well.
And Christine really did do a long form piece on it. She, you know, breaks down each of the images too. And she interviewed both me and the model. So, and then she brings herself into the article too, because I mean, it was just such an interesting thing with all of us, you know, coming at it from a little different place. But I do think it's worth the read, but it's not, you know, we're so used to getting things like that. It is a little bit longer form. And then she also did, we did do a Zoom meeting with her afterwards. And I think I haven't gone back to the link yet to see if she's loaded it onto the article, but she did a kind of an interview with us on like this on Zoom, I think it was. And and I think she's added that to the article too. And
I just want to, I mean, if there were ever a time for, you know, artists to slow down and stop expecting information to just come at you and like be an active participant and take some time to go check out this series and take the time to actually be undistracted and involved in that conversation. Not you.
And I do ask if it resonates with people, please share it. We're trying to get it, you know, out there as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be a really big conversation. And not only that, but just taking the time with the pieces that were created, to just take it in and try to see how it resonates with you personally. And they're beautiful. And I feel something so different with each piece that you've created. Like, there are parts of me, you know, somebody who has suffered with depression as well. It's like, there are parts of me that I've looked at different pieces and thought, I've never seen anything that just like hit that painful part so clearly. Like that, the image just represented that part, and it felt like you understood, you know, some of those hard places that you can't talk about. And I think it's an important project, and it's a big deal for people to be able to resonate with those hard places.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you came on. And I just always, I feel so fortunate that you're coming here to talk with us and the listeners that are out there and growing and listening. And
I'm stoked that you're doing this. I love that you're doing this. And I was so excited to see you pop up in my email. I'm like, oh, I get to see Rosemary again. Because we never went out and had that drink.
Oh, yeah. God. Yeah. Wasn't that ever going to happen? But you know, I paddleboard also, so.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Come up here. You should come up here. We'll go paddleboarding. We can paddleboard like 20 feet apart at least.
Oh, totally. I know. You don't have to touch each other's boards.
That's right.
Cars. Water.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. I'm so down. I need to get out anyway.
Yeah. And we've got some great bars and restaurants that are doing some awesome to-go cocktails. And
we can
enjoy one of those afterwards.
Oh, that's awesome. Yes, for sure. That's a thing now. I forget.
It is. It is.
That's finally a thing.
Yeah. The liquor board just said okay to that. And man, people are digging it.
Yeah, there's still money in that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, liquor and snack sales are out the roof right now.
I know. It's I talked to a guy who was selling liquor at the local Fred Meyer, and he's like, you wouldn't believe it. He's like, people are buying like, you know, bottom shelf stuff when all the high end stuff goes. He's like, who drinks Kahlua?
Anybody who can't get their vodka or gin, that's who.
Yeah. Just cracking me up. Yeah. So liquor sales have gone up 40%.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure how that like works into depression here, but.
A little scary when you start pairing that up.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Seriously. Yeah. Well, there's definitely some numbing going on. So for a reason.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh my gosh. Well, thanks again.
Thank you, Rosemary. It's great to see you again. And hit me up when you want to go paddleboarding.
Oh my gosh. Very soon.
Okay. Sounds good.